Yes, indeed. He's quite a reader and also quite a scribe as well. Bob Glauber joins us now, and he's actually going to have to work today because I'm the host, and I actually ask questions and then let the analyst talk a little bit. As opposed to, no, I'm not saying that. Anyway, Serena's off today. He'll be off on Monday, and Bob Glauber is here to earn his pay. Bob, how you doing today?
Danny, my voice is a little bit rough, but I'll get through. And when I heard you were on, I'm like, all right, get the honey ready.
I'm not going to bring the honey.
As in, like, take a tablespoon of honey just to kind of get through it. But
all right, well, I hope that you...
I'm ready to talk.
Hope that you feel better. And let's talk. Let's start with last night. You know, Chiefs fans probably hoping for a little something something from the Tennessee Titans, and instead Pittsburgh looks like world beaters right now. They struggled through a couple games, but you don't want to see them hit their stride. And it looks like, having won the games that you know, they didn't play well in, now they seem poised to really be kicking it into high gear.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad news for Chiefs fans, obviously not for Steelers fans. And this team looks as, you know, it looks as complete a team maybe in the AFC right now because their defense is starting to play well. And the offense is a little bit more consistent. The defense has been pretty good. I mean, the Kansas City game was terrific for that defense. But this Steelers team is a little bit different, and they have one thing going for them, and that is they can play man-to-man. And, you know, they got scorched by the Patriots in the playoffs last year because they were playing zone, and Tom Brady was just putting on a clinic in how to deal with his own defense. And they had to make a change. They did. They went out and got Joe Hayden, and they added to their arsenal of cornerbacks who could actually cover one-on-one. And it's made a huge difference. And I think you saw the results of that with Marcus Mariota just absolutely coming unglued on a national television game, and he was not very good at all.
No doubt about that, and of course the Chiefs have to beat the Steelers by a game in order to finish ahead of them in the standings. And let's turn to the Chiefs now. Obviously, you know, in looking at some of your recent stuff, your boots on the ground as far as the New York Giants situation is concerned, this seemed to be the week that he might Ben McAdoo might get the gas. And they've decided not to.
Oh God!
Well,
that's hard, man.
Well, you know,
get the gas.
Yeah, well,
wow.
That's exactly right. But he has survived at least till the end of the season, apparently. You can always just say we're not going to do anything in the off season, then fire the guy last week. And I guess you can't get much lower than getting beaten rather soundly by a team that hadn't won a game. Were you at all surprised that a move wasn't made, or is this just seems like kind of what the Giants do, really?
Yeah, it's what the Giants do, and I would have been surprised if they had made a move. I've been through this before. There was a guy many years ago named Ray Handley,
mm-hmm.
and he is now in the dustbin of NFL history, having coached 2 years after Bill Parcells, and he was not fired in year two. They went 6-10. It was just one after the other, just an embarrassing performance, and they didn't fire him then. Now, that's Wellington Mara was the president of the Giants then, and John, his son, is now. But I think there is that legacy of, you know, they're going to remain patient. I don't know that the interim coaches, it's a weird thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
you've seen that in Kansas City. Romeo Crennel did a good enough job, and he got the full-time job, and it, you know.
It was a bad idea.
It went up in flames, right. So you don't really gain much in an interim situation. And Jeff Fisher is probably the best example of a guy who carved out a long career taking advantage of a good performance as an interim coach in Houston. And, you know, he lasted many, many years in the NFL. But by and large, it doesn't work. You're just putting a Band-Aid on it, and you're saying to the fans, we hear you, we're going to make this move, here you go, I hope you're happy, now we move on and get a permanent coach. So I think that's the dynamic in play. I don't think they will change from that. I think Ben McAdoo will last the entire season, come hell or high water, and right now it's both.
Well, it's high water right now, and there's a lot of narrative out there. There was a guest on this program yesterday, Bob Schwartzman, I believe, who, you know, Dan Schwartzman, many people describing the scenario being the Giants have quit on Ben McAdoo, et cetera. Do you sense that, or are they just playing bad? This team has 17 players on IR. I don't know if I've ever heard anything like that. I mean, that's like a third of your squad is done for the year. Just talk about the situation with the Giants, and is there any scenario where they actually play a good football game here soon?
I don't foresee them playing a good football game this Sunday. Look, anything's possible. It is the NFL, and they do have talent on this team, despite the injuries, but that number is extraordinarily high. Now, we've seen teams in the NFL, remember the year the Packers won the Super Bowl, they had I think they had 15 on IR, and it was a remarkable performance by that team. You know, obviously mostly led by Aaron Rodgers, but it was a very resourceful effort. So it can be done, but there are so many injuries that they are very much depleted. And I think they're depleted from a psychological standpoint, too. They just – and they're trying. There have been a few instances where, you know, last week Janoris Jenkins, the cornerback, waved at a few tackles, and he did not have a good game. He had really a terrible game coming off a suspension, so the worst possible moment. But, you know, it's a team that seems to be still fighting for its head coach. They are saying the right things. I mean, they're just about every day, and they say the right things. And you know, you look for signs. You look for cracks. The only cracks we've seen are two anonymous comments to ESPN's Josina Anderson that were summarily dismissed by the majority of the players in the locker room the next day. I mean, they really had a vigorous defense of Ben McAdoo then and said, hey, You got a problem. You say it to my face, or you say it to the coach's face. Enough with that. And I think that was actually a, you know, I don't want to say a good thing because there's really nothing good about 1-8. But it was positive in that I don't think you'll see that kind of off the record sniping that you often do with teams that have these losing records. I mean, you see it all the time, and you blow it up in New York where it gets magnified, and you know there can be chaos. But I think they're doing a reasonably good job of keeping it together and not going public with their complaints.
Surprisingly enough, usually when a team is just god-awful and there's a lot of injuries and you know, there's a lot of pressure on the quarterback, the quarterback's play is just hideous, and that's not the case with Eli Manning. Now, he fumbles the ball too much, but if you just look, can ignore that part, his numbers really are okay and doing it under a lot of duress.
It really is remarkable. His numbers are basically in line with what he has done throughout his career. And this is a career that includes two Super Bowl runs. You know, he had his moment. I think his high water moment came in probably 2011, around there. You know, between 2007 and 2012, he had a good year in 2012. That was his prime years as far as stats go. But overall, on average, he has been remarkably consistent. And it's amazing how similar the numbers have been. I don't know, quarterback rating, you know, over 80. His touchdowns and interceptions are still solid. And he does fumble the ball. He had a bad one last week that came at a very inopportune time. But overall, he's still seeing the field well. He's still got a live arm. He throws a few too many bad interceptions. What quarterback doesn't except Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers? But, you know, he has been highly functional. So it is kind of a weird thing. It's more on the defense the last few weeks. The defense has allowed, 82 points, I believe, 82 or 83 points the last two games combined. You know, it's hideous. it's just hideous. You know, one, the Rams, you understand, they're the highest scoring offensive football, but you know, you give up 31 to a rookie quarterback and a winless team in San Francisco, you know, you got a problem. I think the Rams game really pointed up their shortcomings on defense, especially in the secondary. They didn't have Janoris Jenkins in there. He had been suspended that game, but still, Jared Goff just lit him up, and Sean McVay did a tremendous job of play calling. So, you know, you kind of understand that one a little bit, but then the next week, just putting out what they did in San Francisco was pretty miserable.
It was indeed. All right, let's go this way for a final on the Giants, and then we'll move over to the Chiefs. Paint a scenario of a Giants upset this Sunday. I think the game's actually going to be in play. Chiefs didn't look so hot going into the bye, and yes, they play well coming out of the bye, but I still think they've got some problems there. I think they're going to win the game, but I think it's going to be maybe a little more competitive than people think. Am I crazy? And to sort of how would the Giants be able to pull it off on if this unfortunate occurrence for Kansas City fans would happen?
Yeah. You know, I can see, you try to envision that, you know, how would it look? And I think it would look that the Giants would establish a good ground game against a vulnerable Chiefs defense that plays the run pretty poorly on a consistent basis. So Orleans Darkwa is a solid running back. He's had a good year. He got the job finally, and really he'd been their most fluid and effective runner for about 3 years, and he just could never get the starting job. I would often ask him, they got pictures of you or something, or you know, what's up? You know, I don't know. But they, you know, they saw it and they had to make a change there. Paul Perkins had not been getting the job done. So have Darkwa, you know, get into the flow early in the running game. You get a couple of big plays from Eli Manning. Now Sterling Shepard, his second year receiver, is having a good year. I mean, he came back from an ankle injury the day that they lost four receivers, and he's looked terrific. I mean, he looked terrific in the deep passing game, which is not what you've expected from a guy like Shepard, who is more in line with, you know, a Victor Cruz-type guy, a slot receiver. But he's made some pretty explosive plays deep. You run that deep post, you get a couple of plays there, and then the offense maybe surprises with a couple of good drives. And defensively, you know, that's where the rubber is going to have to meet the road. And it's going to be hard for the Giants to deal with Tyreek Hill. It's going to be, you know, impossible for them to deal with Travis Kelce because they cannot play the tight end. I think Kelce is going to be the key to the offense for the Chiefs because the Giants have been so unable to deal with the tight end. They got tremendous problems with injuries at linebacker, and I think that's going to show itself. So that's where it's got to happen. And if they can somehow just contain – it sounds so weird. If they can contain Alex Smith's passing game, you know, how often are we talking about Alex Smith, you know, being the problem? Well, now a depleted secondary has got to deal with a revived Alex Smith, who admittedly has been off the mark in the last couple games. But, you know, that's got to happen. They've got to make a play in the secondary, maybe come up with an interception or two. And then I think it becomes a game and it becomes competitive. But, you know, I keep looking at 16-2, Andy Reid coming off the bye, and that's the number that keeps sticking in my head. But, look, it's why you play the game, and anything can happen.
That is true. Let's look at the Chiefs before we take our first break. And, you know, they really did kind of limp into the bye week, and it really was easy, you know, just an easy turn. We saw a 5-0 team that looked like this was a different team, that it was a championship caliber team, that you really could dream the dream. And the last four games has really kind of reinforced the thought that, you know, this is kind of the same old Chiefs. They're okay. They're good. They're going to make the playoffs, but really not much of a threat to go the distance. Is it sort of somewhere in between, or is it more like just the same old?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. They don't know the answer to that. That's really the fascinating storyline of this last half of the season for the Chiefs. And I'd certainly like to, I think any football fan would like to see them play at their best. And at their best, they're the most vibrant, enjoyable, fun offense to watch in football.
And that's a big change.
That's a huge change.
I think Curtis often described their offense as painful to watch, even when effective. You know, 13, 14 play drives, dink, 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 dink. Then all of a sudden it's just party time. And then I guess the buzzkill has been the last few weeks when there's been a lot more dumping off and they can't run the ball and all this other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the last time you said that about a Chiefs offense was in the Dick Vermeil, Trent Green days where – you know, it was a pass-happy offense. But I think this is even more enjoyable than this because there's so many ways to go. And Andy Reid he's like a kid in a candy store with all these different weapons and all these different wrinkles he can throw into the offense. Now it hasn't worked. And sometimes you got to go back to the basics a little bit when you have this arsenal of weapons and it's not working. And I think that's what he'll try to do. Just get your confidence up. And that's what's going to have to happen. But That's maybe the storyline of the AFC is, you know, who are the Chiefs and what are they going to be coming down the stretch and into the playoffs? And I think they will be a playoff team. I'd like to think they're swagger back. They're going to have to get better defensively. There's no question about that. And that's a big thing. I don't think you can underestimate that. But offensively, you just look for those signs of, you know, Hill kind of getting into that dominant mode again. I think Kelce is what he is. He'll be a playmaker for you no matter what. And Alex Smith, whether he'll continue to be that, you know, the mad bomber down the field that he was in the first half of the season, that was so refreshing. We just never seen that out of him. And I'd like to think that can come back. But, you know, a lot on the line these next seven games for this team.
No doubt. And a schedule that just screams out that you can run the table. And, you know, especially the Bills look like they've regressed a little bit, and somehow a team that's right in the playoff race is changing their quarterback, and, you know, and Jets don't look as good as they did before, and then there's some god-awful teams in there, obviously, the Giants among them. So, boy, and the hardest games are all at home, so it really does lay out there. If this team goes, you know, 4-3 in the last day, they're going to make the playoffs still, and even 5-2 probably is somewhat of a disappointment, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. The schedule really does set up well for them, so it's really all right there, and they'd only have themselves to blame if they can't take advantage of that and get into some decent playoff positioning. Whether it's going to be, I know, getting two home games, probably not, but because I think you know, Pittsburgh is right now. The Patriots have righted themselves now. They've got a big game in Mexico City against the Raiders, who have kind of fallen flat. But it is set up right there, and maybe it was a good time for the bye. They just kind of lost themselves a little bit there. Regather, get some confidence, let that Andy Reid post-bye mojo work a little bit, and then off we go.
Bob Glauber from Newsday is our guest. We're talking NFL, getting into the Roger Goodell situation, which still is a Roger Goodell situation. After a week after we talked to you last. So let's do it again coming up next right here on the program.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Among active NFL defensive players, who has the most career interceptions? There are two guys that have 40. Or more. One has 43, one has 41.
Try to find me again. I was paying attention to the song.
You were rocking to the tune.
I was rocking to the song. It's doing my job.
It's a good little hook. Among active NFL players, defensive players, who has the most career interceptions? I say defensive players so that people don't think I'm talking about quarterbacks. Throwing interceptions. Somebody has 41. Somebody has 43.
Aqib Talib.
Aqib Talib is fourth at 34.
Bob, you got any help here?
Robert?
Well, I don't think it's Dick Sherman.
No, he is tied for fifth at 32.
32? Wow. Okay.
With Brent Grimes, oddly.
Wow. How about that? Brent Grimes sneaking in there.
How about Joe Hayden?
Joe Hayden, no.
No.
Got to be an old...
That's 20.
It's like some guy who... sucks now, but it was...
He has not had an interception since 2013.
Wow, but he's still playing.
Yes, he's still playing. Still playing for the same team that he's been playing for... This is his ninth year with this team.
Yeah, this is bad radio. McCourty?
Bob has seen him play this year, likely.
McCourty?
Uh-uh.
I have seen him play. Oh,
I think you probably have. Let's see. Has this team been to your team? Played the Chiefs this year.
What team?
Played the Chiefs.
NFC like, East.
What's that?
NFC East.
NFC East team.
And they have, I know they have not played at the Giants yet, so maybe you
okay, Josh
them.
Norman?
Nope.
Malcolm Jenkins. They have not played at the Giants, so they have not played the Giants yet. East team, so it's...
They haven't played at the Giants yet.
Oh, okay.
Bob will hit
Dallas, the road. Brandon Carr?
Nope.
No.
All right, give it to us. This is bad.
How about D'Angelo Hall?
Oh.
Ah, M'Angelo.
Say yes. Second on the list, Terrence Newman at 41.
Oh, yeah, both.
So both
that's
in the
amazing.
NFC.
Both kind of blast from the past.
Yeah, Buddy Jed gave me that question.
He leads the NFL. It's 43?
Mm-hmm. Hasn't had one in 4 years.
And he hasn't had one in 4 years. That's spectacular.
That means he had a bunch. He had a bunch. That's a good one. That is a good one. But it was going on too long. We had to let it out of the bag there eventually. Bob, let's talk some Roger Goodell. I want to run this by you a little bit. It just popped into my head. You know, Roger Goodell is sort of a big, strong-looking guy. You know, looks like he works out and everything. He was in Kansas City last year, and it was the first time I interviewed him in a setting where I was, you know, just in a small group of reporters. I'd done it in a podium-type setting before. I was completely unimpressed with him. Completely. He looked nervous. He seemed completely ill at ease. And he seemed to be the exact opposite of a real strong leader. Are you surprised that I had that opinion when I was face-to-face with him?
No, not necessarily, because I remember when he first got the job as commissioner, what was it, 06? I think it was 06. He went around to different teams, and they had small groups of reporters talk to him.
Yep.
He spoke so softly, and I'm like, wow, like, you know, normally you want to have a commanding presence. So I think his in-person presence can be like that. Now, I will tell you that people are charmed by him when they meet with him individually. When he's on the field before a game, he seems to be at ease, and players bear hug him all the time in the draft. It seems genuine, and these guys are excited that their future is going to be determined and where they're going to go. So there's just general excitement. They'd hug anybody.
Which, by the way, always looks stupid.
Well, there was the one, wasn't it the Chiefs player where they were so close and it has a great picture of it,
yes, and it looked like.
Who was it?
I forget.
Kurt, do you know who it was?
Poe. It was Poe. Yeah, Dontari. Dontari Poe. But Dontari Poe is a hugger anyway. You sort of feel like giving him a hug. You know, he's kind of that type of guy. But he was there for some kind of, you know, they were unveiling some athletic. So he was in athletic garb, and Goodell looks the part. You know, I mean, he looks like it. But then he starts talking, and you're like, I look like, boy, I could just eat this guy alive in a debate. I mean, that's the way I was struck. But anyway, so he's up for renewal here, and Jerry Jones is still stirring the pot. Where's this going?
Well, it's going toward a real lively discussion on December 13th in Dallas when the owners next meet. And they have decided to carve out a portion of that meeting just for owners only to basically try to hash it out. And I don't know where Jerry Jones stands on this one. I don't know if anybody really does, only because it seems like there is a significant portion of owners that are troubled by, you know, the negotiations with Roger Goodell, who's looking for a deal that gets him, I think, into 2024. It's an important time for the NFL because they'll eventually have labor and TV agreements up, and that's the lifeblood of this league. So Goodell has done a good job with both, in terms of the owners, as far as the owners are concerned, with both TV and labor deals. So it's a very vulnerable time for the owners, and I think we'll get some more clarity there. I was struck by a couple of things. You know, on the last owners meeting in October in New York, Jerry Jones said not a word, not one word. And that was when the draft was awarded to Dallas next year. His daughter, Charlotte, talked about publicly in the press conference about that. Jerry Jones did not say a word. And this is also about the Anthem protest, in which he was a distinct minority of owners who wanted to demand that the players stand, wanted to make it a rule. And he didn't say a word. And I found it odd, because when was the last time Jerry Jones walked away from microphones without saying a word? Never. So it just kind of struck me. And then to see all this stuff come out, it's like, wow, there's a problem here. And I don't know what kind of constituency Jerry Jones has right now. It could very well be that the owners want to kind of shoot him down and say, knock it off. You're only pissed off because your player got suspended, and that's not the way it works. Bob Kraft was furious at Roger Goodell, but in the end, in a pretty interesting moment in San Francisco at an owners meeting in May of the year that Brady was suspended, he basically threw up the white flag and said, look, you know, I'm an owner, and these guys have stood by me when I first came into the league, and I'm going with the league. I accept my punishment. I accept the sanctions here of a first-round pick, $1 million fine, and another pick. I'm not happy about it, but I'm going to move on. And Jerry Jones has done the exact opposite. Now, there's a quote that came out today that is a pretty damning quote. I won't say the entire thing because you can't say it on the air, but Jerry Jones basically said, hey, you think Kraft gave you, yeah, you know, some lip. You haven't seen anything yet. And
Bob Kraft is a
as far as Jerry Jones is concerned. I just don't know what kind of commitment he has from other owners to fight that war through to its conclusion, which in Jerry Jones's mind would be and perhaps should be that Roger Goodell shouldn't be the commissioner of the NFL anymore.
Yeah, I'm staring at that lengthy story that's going to be in ESPN, the magazine. If people want, it's on the front page of ESPN right now, and it has the quote in there. And early on, it looks like it's about a 15-page article, as a matter of fact. You know, it seemed unlikely at the outset. What we heard at the outset was that, you know, it was a small group of owners, 5, 6, 7. Now we're hearing more. It's like half and half. Is there any chance that Roger Goodell will end up not being the commissioner?
I don't think so. I think there will be, some bare-knuckle words thrown around there.
Bare-knuckle brawl.
I think they'll fight it out, and I think they'll come to a conclusion that at the end of the day, Goodell stays, and maybe they just kind of chip away at some of the enhancements, shall we say, in his contract that would still go through 2024. And see what Jones doesn't have going for him is the line of history of his own remarks. Up until the time that Ezekiel Elliott was suspended, he was fine with Roger Goodell. I spoke to Jerry Jones last year on the 10th anniversary of Goodell's commissionership, and Jerry he couldn't say enough kind things about Roger Goodell. Bob, I think Goodell's done a fine job.
That's a damn good imitation, Bob.
Bob's a good mimic.
Well, thank you, Danny. I try. I give Roger Goodell a 10. I give him a 10. We've got some problems in this league that I don't know if any commissioner would come out of it clean, but I commend Roger Goodell for doing his part in making our sport as good as it can possibly be.
Well, all you need now is just a little sort of a small, a bald cap with a bad toupee, and then just do them, and then you'd be great. But let me just...
I need an agent.
This is going to sound silly in our world, but except for the money part of it, Goodell has presided over, you know, kind of a crummy period for the league, hasn't he?
Yes. Yes. The one word with Goodell is it's chaotic.
Right.
And I have to tell you, I've been covering the league a long time, so I've covered three commissioners. So I go, you know, Roselle was great. He was a Hall of Famer. By the time I started, he was kind of winding down, and it was getting to him. The strikes really got to Pete Roselle and basically sent him out of the league. And the labor stuff, it got a hold of him. So and then Paul Tagliabue comes in. He's this completely boring, but brilliant attorney.
Perfect. That's what you want for a commissioner. Boring.
Yes. Now, so a lot of my brethren in the media, not a lot, but a few, kind of took umbrage that, well, he's not good in the press conference. He's smug. He's, you know, a little arrogant. condescending. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, who gives a crap? Like,
right.
Who cares? Who cares? Like, as long as he's good. And he was good. Now, he was good in a very boring way. So it didn't make for headlines. But he was a consensus builder. And often what would happen, if there was a real crisis that would occur, say a player or several players were misbehaving. Now, this ended up to be his weakness.
But, right.
But he would always slow walk things. He would always dial it back. There was like a time when things were going crazy. He would just almost obfuscate, as an attorney will do, and just move on and kind of avoid, but not light things on fire. Now, Goodell, by contrast, he's like, if there is a crisis, he will go punch it in the face and say, let's go. Come on, let's fight. And it just blows up into these massive crises. And I go back to 07. It's Michael Vick, when that stuff happened.
Right.
The NFL, and I describe it to some of my colleagues who cover this league, and we go, we just lurch from one catastrophe to the next. And, you know, whether it's Michael Vick with the dogfighting, then it's lockout, then it's bounty gate, and it's spy gate, and it's deflate gate, it's Ray Rice, you know, domestic violence, which is obviously a huge issue. I'm not trying to minimize any of this stuff, but it's just one thing after another, and there's no, I want to say grace, but he doesn't thread the needle on things. He's not smooth with these things. So these massive crises. Now, the one thing about these crises is that the league has always come out on the other side in a better way, you know, more popular, making more money. But now, we're not making as much money. And, you know, most recently, the Anthem stuff is still getting away from him and the league. It's still not gone away. I can't, you know, I run into people in my world, you know, friends and neighbors, and they ask how it's going. I go, yeah, I'm just busy. It's this time of year. Giants are not good, and the Jets are mediocre, but it's still busy. You know, it's football. And two of them in the past week, yeah, well, I don't know. I haven't watched a minute of football. I said, what? You know, aren't you a Giants fan? Yeah, I haven't watched a minute. Not 1 minute. Well, what's going on? Ah, they, you know, until they stand, I'm not watching. Now, I got to believe that, I think I came back with, I think it's like 15 guys now who are taking a knee for the anthem or not, you know, or putting a fist in the air. I don't care. If one guy is taking a knee, I will not watch that sport. I have to believe that that is not, you know, an individual response of people just that I know. I have to think that's going on around the country. And the league has to understand that, you know, this is still a big problem and a big issue of appearance. So that's on Goodell, too, because he still hasn't navigated his way through this. He's trying to please everybody, but, you know, sometimes when you try to please everybody, you please nobody.
We'll get back to some more on-the-field stuff with Bob Glauber coming up. He's from Newsday, and he is, of course, our longtime NFL expert, and you've heard every bit of the reason why today right here on the program. Bob Glauber back with us. Final segment right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. 2 minute drill straight ahead. Bob, you touched on it in passing a little bit earlier, but are the Rams the easily most underappreciated story in the National Football League this year?
Well, maybe. I mean, I certainly have taken note. I think certainly people in L.A. are starting to do it. It's a great time for them to be good because they're trying to build football back in L.A. and it's been tough. But when you go cute and cuddly stories of the year, I think the Rams are number one. It's great, cute and cuddly NFL, tough guy, yeah. But it really is a remarkable story. And for everything from, you know, the unlikely team the out-of-the-box hiring of Sean McVay, who, good Lord, has been, I mean, he's been the coach of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find someone who is kind of, you know, maybe Doug Peterson. You know, two more unlikely guys to lead the list of coach of the year candidates is stunning.
They yeah, are, color me stunned about Doug Peterson, let me tell you. I covered
right?
him. I was like, what? No
right.
way. No
yeah.
way.
If you saw Doug Peterson back when Donovan McNabb was a rookie, that poor guy, he had no chance. I mean, Andy Reid went with him as a starter. Maybe this is payback. Yeah, this is karma, right?
Right.
The guy was absolutely lit on fire. I mean, you know, psychologically. It was like people hated him because he couldn't, you know, they wanted to see McNabb, and they eventually did. But in the meantime, Doug Peterson really took it on the chin in a lot of ways. So the Rams, goodness, I mean, Jared Goff turnaround has been stunning. And it looks like Sean McVay has basically saved him. I don't know if he would have gone down to the road of gone down the road of ruin had Jeff Fisher still been there, but his turnaround has been remarkable. Great schemes by Sean McVay. The design, the ability to look at defenses and figure out what will work against them, he's a prodigy. Now, let's not, as Bill Parcells used to say, let's not put him into Canton on roller skates, fellas. Okay, let's let time kind of show, and it will, how good Sean McVay can be, but you can't underestimate just how good this team has been and this turnaround has been, and the defense with Wade Phillips has been exceptional.
I was going to bring that up. I mean, Wade Phillips, I think the stat is, hasn't every team he's joined as defensive coordinator made the playoffs the first year? I think that's the stat.
Wow, that's a great stat. I did not know that, but that was tremendous.
And you know what? As a regular season head coach, he was 82-61. He might be the best assistant coach in the history of the game. I mean, you could make some kind of fun case that he ought to go get to the Hall of Fame someday.
Yeah. You could make that case. I don't think that will happen.
No, I don't either. It's unfortunate. You know, but
yeah, but his value has been tremendous. And what a football life. What an interesting football life. You know, growing up as a son of the absolutely adored Bum Phillips, and you know Wade doesn't have that charisma that his dad had, but he's got a snark to him, and he's a great Twitter follow, by the way. He's tremendous. He is snarky and funny and clever and you know gutsy. He throws it out there, and he is a great defensive coach in that the players love his attitude of, hey, I don't care who we're playing. We'll beat him anyway. So doesn't have, you know, the Wade-isms or the bum-isms that Bum Phillips had, but, you know, it's pretty close, and his value as a defensive play caller has been extraordinary. There's a lot of talent there, and he has got it going in the right direction.
How much of a threat are they?
Well, I think they're a threat. Certainly to win the division, it's a weakened division now with Seattle, with all their injury problems, and Arizona with their quarterback injury problems. It's probably between L.A. and Seattle for that division. And then, okay, what happens? Are they good enough to win a playoff game? Yes, I think they are good enough to win a playoff game. And I think they got that attitude of, you know what, we don't know what we don't know, which is a good thing for a young team that, hey, they're just playing and winning and enjoying it and not getting, you know, letting the moment get too big for them. Sometimes that can overwhelm a team. So, you know, this could be very well be a dark horse playoff team. I don't know about, a Super Bowl team just yet, but it's kind of a weird year in the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
And unless Aaron Rodgers comes back, I don't know if the Packers are going to be a factor. They're not going to be a factor unless he comes back. Carolina is alternately terrific and head-scratchingly bad. There's not a lot of sure bets, and then Philadelphia would be the most logical team to consider. But they're a very young team with a young quarterback in that situation. So wouldn't it be great to see an NFC Championship game of Philadelphia and Los Angeles, the 1-2 quarterbacks from the draft last year. That would be pretty remarkable, and it could very well happen.
And the Eagles' narrative has really changed, too. Early in the year, they looked good, but there was all kinds of supposed infighting and, you know, defensive coordinator, you know, threatening, you know, apparently like almost a palace coup going on there. And that, I guess, winning solves all issues. That had to be an issue of some sort early in the year, but when you win all your games, I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it was a really compelling story. Jeff McLean from the Philadelphia Inquirer did that a couple of weeks back, where Jim Schwartz was kind of privately carping about, well, he should be the head coach, and, you know, Doug Peterson doesn't know what he's doing. But I think there was almost a healthy resolution to it, in that Schwartz had to back off, and he had to, you know, come out strongly in favor of Doug Peterson, say, no, he's the guy, and I'm all for him, I'm all on board. Yeah. Obviously, stuff happens behind the scenes that you don't know about, and that is not what the public has ended up consuming when it comes out in the media. So, but they, you know, Doug Peterson he's got a really good personality for this kind of job and this kind of market. And that personality is, you know, kind of easygoing, not going to be confrontational, going to let you say your piece, going to let you yell, going to let you scream. But at the end of the day, he's going to try to give you a good plan. And sometimes he's a little bit of the wacky professor, and it looks like it's getting away from him. But, you know, you really can't argue with the results. And you can't argue that Carson Wentz is just this dramatically improved young player who is making Eagles fans delighted and making Browns fans more demoralized with every passing game, because they could add a shot at them, at him. And
Bob, got to
look at him as not a top 20 quarterback, you know, crazy as that sounds now.
Got to run, Bob. It's always a pleasure. You get out of the Final Four today, so enjoy the rest of your weekend. Take care of your throat.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right, Bob Blobber. He's the best. He joins us right here on the program.